Today's edition of Labor, Workplace, and Regulated Industries. I'm going to call the meeting to order. We have some minutes that need to be approved. Representative Metza moves approval of the minutes for March 13, 2014. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. We're going to take up, well, before we get to that, just so everyone's aware, in case they're interested, House File 2157, the Winkler bill has been pulled at the author's request. We won't be hearing that. So we just have two bills before us this morning.
Mr. Chair?
Representative
thank you. So the Winkler bill that you just referenced, the 2157, will not be being advanced anymore this year. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's my understanding. I haven't talked to him directly, but that's what I heard.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome. Welcome, Representative Falk. I'm going to move that House File 2447 be re-referred to the General Register. So again, welcome, and go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Good morning. I think it's the first time I've been before this committee, so it's kind of a new experience for me. But House File 2447 was brought to me by the Veterans Service Office in Chippewa County. And basically, it's requires that employers provide either a paid or unpaid day off for Veterans Day. And the exception would be if there's a necessary public health or safety issue, or if it would cause an undue or significant economic impact and operational disruption to the business. And mechanics of this would be that the veteran would provide documentation to the employer at least 30 days prior to Veterans Day that they'd like to have the day off and written notice. And then the employer would respond whether or not that time off has been granted. This has been tried to be structured in a way that is as fair to all parties involved. We do understand that we want to make sure that the businesses have time to plan if they have to get somebody else scheduled for that day, but we also want to make sure that we're being fair to veterans. And it's pretty amazing that after this bill was introduced, I've got a fair amount of publicity on it. I didn't really expect that, but this was reported in the Associated Press. There was a copy of that article even printed in the San Francisco newspaper, and I've just received numerous emails from across the state, people thanking me for this. I can just read one. This is a real brief, short one. It says, "Dear Rep. Falk, kudos to you for taking a stand to agree that it's our legal right as veterans to have Veterans Day off from work. I've stated this for years, that as a veteran, here I sit at my job on Veterans Day, and thousands of city, state, and federal workers, many of whom have never served our country, get the day off. I feel that this is a disrespect to those whom have given a life and time for our country and our freedoms. Thank you again, and keep up the excellent work." And I've just received numerous emails like that. And this is something, too, that I do think a lot of folks kind of almost expect that veterans would have Veterans Day off, a day of rest and honor for them, but that isn't always the case. And so far, it's just been a very positive amount of feedback.
Very good. Thank you very much. Is there anyone here who wants to testify in the audience, testify for or against this particular bill? Seeing none, I will open up the questions, and Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions defining a significant economic or operational disruption is certainly one. And I don't believe there's anything in the language requiring the employer to react within a certain amount of time in order to grant the individual who's asked the day off. So, I mean, theoretically, they could say, I'll tell you. There's really then no way to plan to do anything other than just being off for the day, because the employer could say, oh, I'll tell you the day before. So the first question, 10 days, okay, I'm sorry, there is something. But help me understand defining significant economic or operational disruption. I mean, it's a question that will come up, and certainly at some point somebody will challenge whether or not.
Representative Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know Representative Benson, you asked, similar question in State Gov Finance Committee, but, I mean, it is undefined, and once again, we do leave significant leeway, but this is also kind of modeled after legislation that was brought forward in Iowa, and I wouldn't want Iowa to think that they're, you know, a step or a bound ahead of us when it comes to treating their veterans well.
President Benson?
Okay, so from what I understand, then there was no thought given to trying to define it all. It was just left open to a definition that can be interpreted by the parties.
Representative Paul?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, we did leave it fairly undefined to allow flexibility for the employee and the employer, but we do have in place a process where you're requesting leave 30 days prior written, and the employee is to be receive basically whether or not that has been granted within 10 days of Veterans Day. And if there is disagreement, then there is some time, hopefully, for them to be able to work it out. But ultimately, do I see something like this, you know, if there is a conflict rising to the level of a court case? I find that to be highly unlikely.
Representative Driscoll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looked like you had another thought on your mind. I don't mean to get you off track. Was there something else you wanted to do before you had me?
No, I just saw Representative Uglum was.
Oh, take record. If he was on the list before me, please, by all means.
Representative Uglum?
Why, thank you, Representative Driscoll. Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, just one quick question. Have you had any feedback from the Chamber of Commerce on this bill? Do you know if they're neutral or whatever?
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglum, I have received no contact from them, so they haven't expressed any displeasure or pleasure with the bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Driscoll.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, welcome to Labor, Workplace, and Regulated Industries. We had a chance as well to hear this bill in State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs, and I know one of the things that came up in that committee was a fiscal note. Have you had a chance to get that fiscal note yet?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Driscoll, it's the best fiscal notes I've ever received. It came back 0000000 because, and the rationale was that state employees get Veterans Day off. So if you get a chance to review the fiscal note, it's honestly my favorite fiscal note ever.
Representative Driscoll?
I find that kind of interesting because, to the best of my knowledge, State Patrol and other public safety folks don't get Veterans Day off. We actually pay them a premium to be on that day. And if we end up with giving some of those folks in a bumping some time off because of the union contracts and their bargaining agreements, there would absolutely be a cost to that. Maybe you'd want to revisit that and share that information, unless the plan is that we wouldn't have public safety on the day that we have Veterans Day.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Driscoll, I'd say bring that up with MMB, bring it up with the entity that did the fiscal note. They provide the numbers, they provide the unbiased expertise. So if you have a disagreement with the fiscal note, talk to them.
Representative Driscoll?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, it's not my bill, and I'm just trying to help you make a better bill here and get some support for that from this committee and from others if it does make it to the House floor on that. I would give you your own advice. Maybe you want to take a look at having that in case that question comes up again or what have you, because that is something that was asked at the Veterans, State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs level as well on that. So if that's going to continue to be your thoughts on that, it may be problematic if this bill moves forward. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Well, I mean, just to the point, that's what the fiscal note says. I mean, you can disagree with the number, but that's what they put into it.
Fair enough. Any further questions? Seeing none, the chair renews this motion that House File 2447 be re-referred to the general register. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Your bill is moving forward. Representative Falk, thank you
Mr.
for
Chair,
your time.
Members.
The next bill we have up is House File 2926. Representative Carlson. The chair will move that House File 2926 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Carlson, welcome to the committee, and please go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
this bill creates a public employment relations board under the Bureau of Mediation Services. The board would handle unfair labor practices, ULP charges listed under PELRA administratively, replacing the current practice of handling ULP charges through the district courts. This bill would only apply to public employment, not the private sector, which is under a different section of law. And the way the board would be set up, Mr. Chairman, is that it would be a three-person board. Two members of the board would be appointed by the governor, one representing public employees, the other representing public employers, and then the two of them would choose a third member of the board. There's also a section in there that in case the unfair labor practice involved the permanent member of the board who might have a conflict of interest representing the employer at issue or the employee at issue, that there would be three alternates that would be moved up to make sure that there was not any conflict.
And maybe Representative Carlson, as you move forward with this, I think I'm going to go ahead and move House the amendment, the A140923 amendment. It's the delete all amendment. That yeah. Do you want that moved? Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. In fact, the part of the amendment that I was just describing, in fact, I was basically describing the amendment, is the where you'd have the alternates. We didn't have that at an earlier committee hearing, and so.
So I'll go ahead and move the 923 amendment, put the bill in the shape the author wants. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Go ahead again, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill, in addition to the board then, and the reason for it is to make the system more efficient and also to make it more cost-effective. And when you have to go to the courts for an unfair labor practice, it sometimes gets long and drawn out, can be sometimes months or even years. And so if you go to a panel like we're providing for in the bill, it's much more efficient. And this is the system that, by the way, the vast majority, 30-some-odd states, do it through mediation as opposed to going to the courts. So we would be aligning with what most states do. I think there's only three states that do it the way Minnesota currently does. And the cost, if you go to court, can easily reach $60,000-$70,000, where if you do it through mediation, it can be as low as $5,000. So a cost savings both on the from the administrative side or the public employer side, as well as the union. And so I think we have to keep in mind that it's more efficient for both sides if there's a question of an unfair labor practice. And I have with me people who would be willing to testify or comment on the bill if you would like, Mr. Stanton, who represents the IFO. And
well, thank you, Representative Carlson. And Mr. Stanton, would you like to say a few words?
Sure.
Please identify yourself and go ahead.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, Russ Stanton. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Interfaculty Organization, which is the state university faculty, and we are speaking in favor of the bill. This legislation was initiated by the IFO, but it's the actual legislation is the work of a broad coalition of groups, including Education Minnesota, AFSCME, MAPE, SEIU, the Teamsters, the two-year college faculty, MMA, the government engineers, AFL-CIO, et cetera. So we've made sure that everybody was on board on this. And what it does is, in layperson's terms, is simply allow folks that have an unfair labor practice charge to bring it through a panel at the Bureau of Mediation rather than through the courts. And as Representative Carlson pointed out, it's very costly when you go through the courts. When you go through the courts, you have to have an attorney and that drives up the cost a lot. Also, when you're dealing with a panel like this, you're dealing with people making a decision that know something about labor law. They specialize in it, whereas a lot of district courts judges do not. So it's a much quicker, much cheaper. To give you an example, a typical charge brought through the courts is $50,000 to $75,000. When you go through an administrative procedure like this, it's much cheaper. For instance, in the private sector, it's regulated by the National Labor Relations Board, and they have an administrative procedure, and the average cost is about $5,000, so about one-tenth the cost. And that's particularly important for, keep in mind, unfair labor charges can be brought by employers against unions, by unions against employers, by individuals against unions or employers. And why it's really important to bring the cost down is right now the court system is just prohibitively expensive for an individual or a small group to bring a charge. As Representative Carlson mentioned, of the 35 states that have unfair labor practices statutes, only three, Minnesota, Arkansas, and Texas, use the court system. The other 32 use a procedure such as we're proposing here. So unfair labor practices are not very common. I've been with the IFO for 28 years. We brought one. Cost us $50,000. We won. And basically the relief was is they told the employer, go back and negotiate in good faith. We're looking for a more efficient, affordable system. And we certainly urge you to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton. It looks like you have somebody else there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and we have Nicole Blissenbach from Admin with us, who happens to be an attorney, and she's here to answer any technical questions that the committee might have.
Okay, so she's there mainly to answer questions. Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience who, before we get to the committee comments, wishes to testify? Come on down. Yes, go ahead and identify yourself. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. We are in support of the legislation that's before you. If we look at legal costs, this would allow both non-lawyer HR directors and union reps to resolve potential issues much more cheaply than both parties are doing so now. Mr. Stanton indicated an example of that, as well as this would expedite the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blyle. Mr. Thorson, you want to identify yourself and go ahead?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Thorson with Education Minnesota. For the reasons stated by Mr. Stanton and Julie Blyle, we support this legislation. Cost, expediency, and also this administrative process would allow a book of expertise to develop around these issues that we think would be beneficial for the whole process.
Thank you very much for your comments. I think there's no other anybody else in the audience wish to testify for or against? Seeing none, we'll go into the committee questions. Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got two quick questions. Representative Carlson, is there anyone that's opposed to this that you're aware of?
And to Representative Carlson.
The bill has been, this is the third committee, and no one has come forward to testify against it. MMB, of course, would be one of the umbrella groups. The other would be the Bureau of Mediation Services, and they're the ones most directly involved, and they haven't come forward to testify. It's been well vented, and there will be another committee meeting tomorrow night on the bill as well, dealing with the funding side. So that's the current status. So I can't firmly say there's opposition or not, but nobody's testified.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more quick question, and I don't know the answer to this. Is there any way that the Bureau of Mediation Services could already do this under the powers that that commissioner has? Or do we need to, I mean, I'm just wondering if this is necessary.
And to the testifier, go ahead and identify yourself and then answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I'm an attorney with Education Minnesota. As of right now, the way the statutory scheme is set up, unfair labor practices can, unless they're brought up specifically in election context, can only be brought in front of the district court. The Bureau of Mediation Services does not have the authority to hear unfair labor practices under the current statutory scheme.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benson, and then go Driscoll.
Thank you, Chairman. You answered one of the questions in that this is the there have only been one case in 10 years. So, in terms of the dire need, you know, to make these changes, I'm not sure that we have it there. I've got a couple concerns. First of all, there apparently will be a fiscal note. Then there'll be an ongoing cost.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the last paragraph there says $125,000. There are two issues with that. One is that it would be a one-time, and the language currently would make it appear to be ongoing. We will be correcting that tomorrow night in the fiscal committee, the employment committee. And the other thing is we have a request in for a fiscal note. We got one back earlier dealing with an earlier version of the bill, and they said it was zero cost. And the reason they said it was zero cost was that we didn't have the language in the bill that we have now. They answered the question because it was zero relative to the Bureau of Mediation Services. But we asked them to kickstart it and help develop the rules as this new panel is created. So there is going to be a cost. Right now, our best guess is about $125,000. But you can be assured the chair of the Ways and Means Committee doesn't let any bills out that don't have a fiscal note. So I can assure you of that firsthand.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand that, and Chairman Carlson, I'm also aware that in state government finance, the chair announced yesterday that there was zero money for state government finance, and we had several really good veterans bills before us that are going to get laid over, and so my concern is now we have found money for an issue that comes up once every 10 years. But I've got a couple more questions. How will any appeals
can
be heard?
Maybe if I could answer that particular question.
Carlson, go ahead.
This one doesn't go to state government finance. The account is in Representative Mahoney's committee where they fund the Bureau of Mediation Services. So it tracks differently than state government finance, just for your information.
Okay.
The other question that you raised, Representative Benson, you said one case. That was one of the unions. That was the IFO and Mr. Stanton's experience. But the number would be larger, although not a huge number, when you look across all of the unions and what their experience has been.
Thank you. More accurately, isn't this more like I know you're calling it mediation, but more like arbitration, because these folks will have a binding power on the parties in terms of the decisions that are made by the board ultimately. How will any appeals be heard? I mean, how will that eventually, could someone appeal? Is this binding to the fact that there's no way to appeal this? Would it be any different than going to district court now in terms of an appeal process?
Go ahead, Ms. Blittenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the bill is set up, appeals of the board will go to the Court of Appeals. So we are skipping the district court piece of this. So the charges will be filed with the board. The board will process those charges, will issue a decision, and that decision can be appealed to the Court of Appeals.
Okay.
President Benson?
One last thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in terms of the $125,000 to set it up, there'll be an ongoing cost. I'm trying to figure out how we'd pay board members for the time that they serve. Most arbitrators, you know, they get paid for the work that they're going to do. I mean, they're essentially writing a brief in 30 days that will describe both what the parties had to say and what the final outcome or the disposition of the case will be. So how will board members be paid for the work that they do?
Representative Carlson?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, under current law, when you're appointed to a board, you're paid a per diem, and that's $55 a day.
So for clarification, then, the only money the members of the board will have will be the $55 a day per diem?
relative to the board members, Mr. Chairman, there will probably be a request. In fact, I know there will be a request next biennium for the ability to hire investigators and that kind of thing. So there will be a future appropriation that we would probably call a tail. That would have to come through the normal budgetary process, and there would have to be a request made, because there would be a need for the board from time to time to have an unfair labor practice investigation. But that would be next biennium. This biennium, we're just concerned about the rulemaking, and the 125, as I said earlier, is a best guess, and that will be a one-time appropriation for the rulemaking.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chairman. That does clear up. I wouldn't have thought that this could be done for free, and there will be an ongoing appropriation necessary, members. One last, the members are going to get $55 a day, but they're not going to get any pay at all for writing the briefs or whatever is necessary in order to prepare this case. I mean, this is a lot of work, because if it's going to get appealed, there's going to be cases that will be appealed, and I can't imagine they're going to be doing this work for gratis, preparing a legal document that eventually could end up in appeals process. So help me understand how that's going to work.
There is language in the bill, Mr. Chairman, that provides for the hiring of needed staff, and that would be worked out, like I say, in the next biennium, whether that staff would need to be full-time. I suspect that they would probably, one of the things I suspect they would look at would be to perhaps have a contractual arrangement, perhaps with the Bureau or for investigators and people who might write the opinion. But that's yet to be determined. That would have to go through the normal budgetary process for a request. But yeah, clearly you would need some level of staffing activity yet to be determined.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just members, this bill looks like it's going to skate through. This bill is going to skate through looking like it's going to cost zero, when in fact we do need a fiscal note, because even if this bill is made into law, there's going to be some substantial fees that we're not seeing in the current testimony in the out years. We can call it tails or anything you want, but this is essentially a new work being done by a new part of a different part of Bureau of Mediation Services that will need to get staff and funded properly.
And Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, just a quick question to kind of help frame this for me. With the Bureau of Mediation Services right now, Representative Nelson and I were just kind of visiting a little bit, and we both believe that they have mediation and arbitration services. Why wouldn't it be appropriate to amend statute to allow these kinds of things to go through mediation and then to arbitration, then on to an appeals court, instead of creating a separate entity on that, since we've already got a mechanism in state law to deal with many of these kinds of things? Just kind of looking to see if there's any redundancies on this.
Ms. Blittenbach?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The process that is used here is modeled after the 32 states that currently have an administrative process for the investigation and processing of unfair labor practice charges. It is a common, well-tested practice throughout those 32 states, and as well as in the private sector under the National Labor Relations Act. It allows for the expertise in this board to hear one type of case, and that's unfair labor practice cases. So it really is a time-tested model that's been used and works.
Representative Driscoll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, right now, if there was an impasse in a collective bargaining negotiation, the Bureau of Labor, the Bureau of Mediation Services would be. Their services could be employed on that, so they would also have expertise in dealing with labor-related matters. It seems to me all we're doing is just adding another chapter in the book of things that they might be able to become experts at. Comment or thoughts on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They do, in fact, provide mediation services. Any arbitration services are actually done between the parties, so the the Bureau provides arbitrators, a list of arbitrators, but the arbitrators are not employed by the Bureau. They are not, you know, they are employed by the parties, and that's through a contractual provision. This this provision or this process allows for people to process unfair labor practice charges, of course, employers against unions, unions against employers, or employees against either employers or unions. And it isn't like a typical mediation or an arbitration. It is a different process.
Representative Hugo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, I'm just following up on what Representative Benson was talking about. I'm really concerned about us signing off on something here where we have no clue in terms of future costs. Now, in Subdivision 7 of the bill, you're talking that the board may hire investigators, hearing officers, and other employees as necessary to perform its duties. Do we have any idea at this point in time how many job positions we are creating?
Representative Carlson?
I would say that it'll be, in my view, a very small number, perhaps an investigator. I'm not sure if that would even be a full-time staff person. That might be an arrangement where you would contract with somebody to do that. I don't see that you would have any large number of employees, but it would be a very small agency that would probably just require the minimal. We're going to be vetting that particular question tomorrow night with the committee that has charge of the funding side of it before the employment committee. But my view is it would be absolutely minimal. And that would have to be vetted next legislative session. What we're doing now is setting up the board and providing the funding for the rulemaking. And then the next step, of course, would be they would have to make a budgetary request like any new initiative would, and go through the entire legislative process. And in the end, that would be the employment committee that would determine what that employment level would be.
Mr. Chair, well, I'm just concerned that by setting up the board now, we have a fait accompli in terms of, all right, now we're going to have all these other people here. We have no budget. We have no business plan. It's quite open-ended. And we just don't have any costs. It may make sense to do this, but from a cost perspective in the future, we're tying our hands if we set this thing up now. We should be doing everything at once. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sarmson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. I just want to say thank you for bringing this bill forward. This, I mean, there's been some comments that this is not a common problem, this unfair labor practice issue, but I will tell you that it's a very common problem. In my years of representing public employees in my own city as well as across the state of Minnesota, this is a very common problem with a very common, unfortunate ending oftentimes. There's a huge difference between grievance arbitrations and contract arbitrations, which are done through the BMS. I mean, that's an established process, and that is separate from what we're talking about here. We are talking about an employee group that would generally like to bring forward an unfair labor practice charge. And under current law, the only way to do that is to go into district court and make that argument in front of the judge. The problem is when you get into smaller groups, smaller employee groups, and smaller cities, is that the only real way to get an effective result in district court is to hire an attorney. You can be the best labor advocate in the world, but you can't necessarily go to district court and think you're going to be successful without an attorney, because you will lose just on process, if not on the merit of the case. So if you have a small employee group of maybe 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 employees, where do they get the resources to pay that attorney? And I'm not suggesting that attorneys are overpaid, but they are expensive and it does cost money. And the cases that I've been involved with, and there's been a number of them, if you go to district court and you make that commitment, you are looking at probably a minimum of $50,000. There's no question about that. And that's just on the union side of it. The city side has an equal expense. And if the city doesn't have a city attorney on staff or an attorney on retainer, They're forced to hire somebody to do that work as well. So unfair labor practices, the problem is, and this I think is what you're going to solve with this bill, is that they're being ignored, is that employee groups are out there. We have employers that are committing unfair labor practices, and because of the very nature of the current law and the cost of it, that they're being forced to essentially ignore it. So I think that your bill would put a huge dent in stopping that practice. So I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward, and I think it's a good bill.
Thank you, sir. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I guess like my comments are along the same line as Representative Simonson. We've been hearing a lot of Chicken Little, the sky is falling, the costs are going through the roof, this is going to be also expensive. But in the testimony we heard, the one case, it cost them $50,000 to get it settled, where in the typical case through a appellate board, it would be $5,000. And that's just for the union side. And as Representative Simonson said, there's also a cost to the employers, which is government side. We're going to be saving money for our local governments, for our state government divisions, and that. So this is going to be cost saving to us as a state by getting these things settled at a lower level, and we can go forward from there. So I, like I said, I'm getting tired with this session of hearing a lot of this Chicken Little thought about everything is terrible, everything's going to make our state uncompetitive, everything's going to, you know, it's just terrible things going on when it really isn't.
Very good. Representative Lane?
Yes, I have a comment, a question. If now people go to court, both sides have to pay for an attorney, it has high costs for each side. Is it possible that this smaller amount that this would cost, they could both chip in? They'd both have to chip in a smaller portion, but they both chip in, and that would make it a little bit more self-functioning. I just throw that as an idea that allow them to each chip into it.
Okay. Representative Kiefer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lane actually just touched on one of my thoughts or questions was, does anybody have any personal skin in the game, or is this just going to be a fight between these parties, and it's going to be on the taxpayers' dime? You can maybe address that. I'm also hearing a little bit of just some conflicting information here, and I'm just trying to learn, but Rep. Nelson, Rep. Erickson say it's a huge problem. There's going to be a lot of cases going to solve a big dent, he said. But then you said it's very small, only one case in 10 years. I'm hearing that in judiciary there were mentions of 5 to 8 cases a year. I'm just wondering if there's, what should we do, just take a middle number on that, or do you have any comments to that?
Mr. Chairman, as I referenced when Representative Benson asked basically the same question, that was the experience of one union. And we're talking here about all of the public employee unions that would be involved in collective bargaining, and the number would be quite a bit different in terms of the need than just that one single union. That was the IFO and Mr. Stanton.
Question, okay?
Okay,
so
well,
much broader as Representative Simonson pointed.
Well, I'll accept that. So we're looking at a bigger issue, a lot more cases, and so then I do have to ask, how is it going to be funded? And if we're going to have cases, especially if they're frivolous cases, who's going to be financially responsible to pay for this? And it may get appealed and end up in court anyway. I'd just like to hear a little bit more about that plan. Thank you.
Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, I have a little trust in the system. I don't think you're going to see frivolous cases come forward. The Pelro law identifies clearly what an unfair labor practice is, and they would have to bring any actions from either side based on what's outlined in Pelro.
Very good. Representative Kiefer?
Thank you. So would this bureau or board would only deal with Pelro violations? There wouldn't be any violations of perhaps maybe some of the bills that we heard last week, if those go into law, and then someone thinks there's an unfair practice in the union print shop of an unreasonable accommodation for a new mom or something. I just want to know if there's some parameters where some cases will be refused to be listened to.
Mr. Chairman, I can't speak to, because I'm not on the committee, what other bills you may have heard. But when you reference a print shop, in all likelihood that was private sector and that comes under federal law. We're talking here about state law and public employment in the state of Minnesota, not the private sector.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, President Kiefer.
Just quick technical. Is anyone from the Bureau of Mediation Services in the room today to give their opinion?
Nope. I don't see anyone.
Looks like no. And then one final question, sir. I don't think this has been heard in the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. Do you think it will be there?
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned earlier, maybe you arrived a little late, Representative Kiefer, but it is up tomorrow before that committee.
Thank you.
Very good. I see no further names on the list here. Representative Carlson, last word.
Well, I just appreciate the support of the committee. And maybe I should clarify when I say it's up before Jobs and Economic Development Committee. I have an identical bill to this one that is before that committee. It's a timing question, and I will be adding the amendment there that we added here. So the bill tomorrow night, or tomorrow, during, I forget the exact time, but it'll be identical to this one. And so I'd appreciate this one going to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. The chair renews this motion that House Bill 2926, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to roll call this vote, please.
A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Johnson.
Chair votes aye.
O'Driscoll.
No.
Benson?
No.
Fisher?
Aye.
Hoppy?
No.
Kiefer?
No.
Lane?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Metta?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
O'Neill?
No.
Savick?
Aye.
Simonson?
Aye.
Sundin?
Aye.
You going?
No.
Seeing the vote as 9-6, the bill passes, and the bill moves on to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Carlson, for your presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Members, two items. Bad news on one end here. There's be no meeting tomorrow, so you'll have to think of something to do.
You said we're not meeting tomorrow?
Not meeting tomorrow. I know. It's a disappointment.
We won't get to see you. Bummer.
Next week, it looks like we'll probably have one meeting, and we'll keep you posted on that and talk to Representative Driscoll about that. Thank you for your time. Have a good day. Meeting's adjourned.